Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrew, here with Bill Goldberg. How's the ranch?
Well, all the animals are still alive because we cut the fireworks display down to actually three individual fireworks because we don't want to kill any of our animals.
Right? Yeah.
You know, God only knows what is going through their mind when a projectile goes up in the air and it, you know, these are like 9 out of 10 out of loudness on the loudness scale. So yeah. We got some gnarly ones and, you know, there's good and bad with having exotic animals. And I suppose on July the 4th, that's part of the bad. So
that's part of it for sure. I mean, we've got the two little dogs and on our balcony in the marina, the marina does a fireworks show. Like they float a barge out in the water and they do this big show and it's like 15 minutes and they do a good job every year. So as long as I've lived out in this area, everybody drives in for it. They close off roads and the first pop or so the dogs hate it. And they, you know, they just come and they jump on your lap and they're like, I don't know what's going on. So this one was kind of interesting for us where we had the TV on. So we turned the TV up, close all the windows, but you can see out, you can see the fireworks, but you can't hear them that much, a little bit, but with the TV on. And then it was interesting because now they want to be close and you're holding them, but now they're staring at the window, out the window, looking at the fireworks, but they're not really noticing the loud noise. And they were much more interested to see, you know, one of them for sure. The other one's like, I'm bored. Got back on the couch and started just sitting there waiting. But yeah, the first pop, the first sound, you see them start running over like, you know, like from Ted in the movie Ted, Thunder Buddies for Life.
Yeah, the first one we lit yesterday or last night, Wanda's reaction was such that we didn't want to light it. She was pretty pissed. So we had actually waited a couple hours. We worked out and then waited like 2 hours till her feeding time, you know, out at the barn around 11:50. So we lit, you know, waited a couple hours for the climax, right? You know, here goes the fireworks, we light the first one. She's like, oh, shit. I'm like, oh, great.
It was just too loud.
That's the beginning and the end of our.
It was too loud. It was too loud. And there's so many various types of animals. Like, it's interesting because the dogs, you know what the dogs are going to do. They're going to come to you and they're going to want, or they're going to hide in their spot, or they're going to come to you and be like, protect me, you know, like, whatever, hold me.
Go to the toilet. Yeah, it's the usual hiding.
Yeah.
But you don't know what's going to happen with these other
you have. They could start hauling ass. You could have a zebra running 40 miles an hour.
Right? Headlong to the fence. But yeah, we unfortunately had that happen before, so we just didn't want to revisit that.
All right. Well, it's done. It's over. Happy Independence Day. Hopefully everybody had a good time.
Well, it was nice sitting on the balcony and watching everybody else's fireworks, you know.
Yeah. Look, from a distance, if there's not quite as much sound, you're right. It's good. It's good to see that. All right. So we got a couple things going on. I've been driving the Audi Q8 e-tron I want to get into.
Can we please talk about the baddest NASCAR race I have ever freaking seen in my entire life last weekend? And please, dear God, NASCAR, do more of them.
Tell us about it. I didn't watch it.
Dude, NASCAR through the streets of Chicago.
Yeah, I heard it was great.
It was fantastic. You know, I mean, there's so many reasons why it was awesome. The drivers had a freaking unbelievable time. At least it looked like it. Obviously, rain postponing and being part of the race kind of sucked because it collected everybody at least once or twice throughout the race and had delays. And, you know, but once the track dried up, I mean, God, it was cool. And they mentioned that 80% of the attendees were first time attendees to a NASCAR race.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, as an entity, I mean, what else do you want? I mean, you got the drivers talking about how awesome it was. You got new fans coming and you got everybody at home watching wanting to be there and be a part of it. I mean, they've definitely tapped into something unbelievable, if you ask me. I mean, I know it's not the easiest task to be able to set it up to drive through the streets of a major city, but fudge, was that freaking cool.
We see them set up out here for a Grand Prix of Long Beach. You've been to it in the past and did the race in it. But yeah, what an undertaking. And you're right. Like, Grand Prix of Long Beach had record numbers. I don't know, like 100,000 people on like 90,000 just on race day. And I don't know how many are new to IndyCar, but cool, impressive. And I've been hearing about the race. I didn't get a chance to watch it.
And then they got a first-time winner, right? This kid jumps in the car from a New Zealander kid, right? And I guess he's a supercar driver. And if first NASCAR race comes in and he smokes everybody. Literally every time they had a restart and he was in front, he'd gap him, you know, within 20 seconds. He's two or three car lengths ahead of everybody. It was extremely impressive.
I'm going to have to read up on him, Shane, right? I got to read up on him to find out, because I heard about him, but I didn't know much about him, because you're right, kind of a new name to me, at least.
And another thing, you know, you, if you're writing a Hollywood script.
Yeah.
The story just cannot continue to get better and better, yet it does. And you could not have had a more gracious and appreciative driver winner than this kid. I mean, it looked like a movie. I mean, it was really freaking awesome. It was a really cool story. Great race, you know, awesome. So bravo, NASCAR. Great job this last weekend.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I know Jenson Button debuted there as well, his NASCAR debut, other than Le Mans, right? But his NASCAR Cup Series debut. I don't know how well he did, but it seemed pretty exciting, and I think he did a pretty good job.
My question is, what do these NASCAR kids think, right? What's old school NASCAR think about a driver coming in to your race with no experience in that car and winning? And not only winning, but pulling away from the pack. I mean, Chase Elliott was in, I think he finished in third, and he was right on his ass at each of the restarts. And I'm telling you, man, he pulled away. This kid did an unbelievably impressive job, and he couldn't have been a more gracious winner. So, bravo.
Yeah, now that there's buzz around it, I think people are going to be interested in seeing what's next.
Well, that, and I think the team, I forgive me, but I don't remember the team owner, but I think the team owner has made it a point to kind of shake up old school NASCAR and bring in drivers like this from other series, you know, as often as possible. So, I mean, I think it's a great idea.
He's from New Zealand. Shane Van Gisbergen.
Gisbergen. Yeah, they announced his name
in
different ways each time. But
right, because people got to be figuring it out, right? They probably didn't like interview him much ahead of time where you could hear him pronounce his name and then realize what he was doing so well. They're like, we better learn his name pretty quickly.
Yeah, real quick. That, and it was interesting to hear old school NASCAR announcers in a kind of a pickle spot, right? I mean, because again, you got this kid coming in that's not a part of the NASCAR. He comes in and he smokes everybody. Well, what does it say about the NASCAR drivers that are there week after week after week? But then again, it's great for the sport, right? So, I mean, it's hard for an announcer to properly set all of that up without trashing the existing drivers who are driving these vehicles week after week. So I think they did a pretty damn good job.
And I don't know if you caught any of the clips even online of IndyCar.
I did not.
IndyCar was at Mid Ohio, and Simon Pagenaud, I guess his brakes went out and just darted off the side and just rolled and rolled and rolled. And it was in, it was actually the day before it was in practice. And it was a, I mean, this car was just flying and smashing to pieces. And he got out of the car. Like he walked away and then they took him, you know, they took him to the hospital, took him to the doctor, and they didn't clear him to race the next day. So he had to opt out. And I think Connor Daly, if I got that correct, I don't have the notes in front of me, but I think he stepped into his car and drove for him the way Graham Rahal drove for someone at Indy 500. And then Simon somehow showed up at the race and he was there and he's like, I'm disappointed I can't race, but these are the rules. And with that type of accident, I'm not cleared by IndyCar, but I'll be back. But I was watching it and I'm like, that I don't know how he's as fine as he seems to be. It's one of those things like you watch it and, you know, his wife is watching it and he's got a little kid. Pretty new though, so probably too young to watch it. I was like, but that's a scary thing to watch as family. I didn't get into the details with it. I sent him an email and haven't heard back yet. But over the 4th of July weekend, and I'm sure he rewatched that thing a couple of times, going, "Oh man, like what happened?" You know, it was epic. Just cars just flopping through the air and hitting the ground. Everything's just flying off of it, busting apart, and you're like, but I tell you that the halo and the safety equipment that has been put into these cars over the years, you know, a testament to that. He walked away from that.
Do you know if they took technology from the off-road boats, offshore boats, or is it the other way around?
Yeah. No, I the offshore boats have had the pod for a while that I'm thinking about, the real high speed ones. So when the boats flip, and I think this has been around for a long time. So maybe there's a bit of a learning thing for that. When the boats flip, like the hydroplane boats or the hydrofoil, whatever they're called, like those things just glide over the water and basically just like the prop is in the water and that's it. And yeah, when they flip and if you're unconscious, you can't get out and you're filling up with water. So the whole cockpit now is like a pod that detaches from the rest of the boat. And I guess that's been pretty effective. I haven't really followed the boating stuff. Somebody brought one to the CarCast studio on a trailer and we fired it up in the parking lot. And
fired up the lawman.
Across the street, the guys doing the ADR, they're doing this, the like sound stage, like voiceover stuff. They came over. They were super sweet. They're like, "Hey man," they're like, we're recording over there, and like all the sound deadening in the world, you're shaking the building, doesn't work." And I'm like, yeah, we're shutting it down right now. And they're like, it's cool. Like if you're gonna be a while, we'll take a lunch break. And I was like, nah, we're just shutting it down. But we got it on a video somewhere. I forgot what the name of the boat was, like Problem Child or something.
What kind of horsepower do those guys run, like the top?
I don't recall. I got to go back and see the video. It must have been 8 or 10 years ago. And they just showed it up. They're like, "Hey, get in it, fire it up." I think Adam got in it and fired it up. But also, like, I don't know, like a lot of the boats now, the exhaust and it goes like through the prop. So it kind of muffles the sound and creates sort of a, like a filter for it. Now there's all sorts of things to make it different now and to make it clean. But even if that was the technology, I don't think that's the technology I have. I think they just go to, I don't know, some sort of straight pipe on it, but it was loud. That thing was nuts. We fired up a lot of shit in that parking lot. We've never heard anything like that boat.
Those dudes are unequivocally the craziest fuckers on the I believe that they supersede Top Fuel guys even.
On the motorcycles. What about the drag race motorcycles? Yeah.
Even those. Are you kidding me? I don't know how they do it. I just really do not know. They are absolutely, they're like freaking astronauts. They have, I mean, I don't know how you could do it. I'd do Top Fuel. There is no way I would do one of those off-road boats.
Yeah.
Offshore boats. Those things are absolutely crazy. Like you said, the only thing literally that's in the water is the prop.
That's it. And it's just skipping. It's like skipping a rock, but a really, really, really fast rock.
Yep.
And you're in. I mean, the drag strip at least is flat, right? Like, imagine running one of the cars and there was bumps in the road, because that's what the water does. Like, it's pretty nuts. And just a little bit of the air gets underneath the boat and they just fly. They just take off. They're pretty crazy to watch.
You're at the mercy of nature out
there. Oh my gosh.
So you can do whatever you can do to control the circumstances, but good Jesus, a burst of wind comes, you know, or a chop or something.
Yeah.
They're nuts.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it on the drag strip too, right? These cars get some air and they fly up in the air.
I've never met one. I don't know why, but I'd love to sit and talk and bend their ear for a little while. I mean,
yeah,
extremely intriguing.
Kind of want to get into like their history, like what got you into this. And of course, there's a handful of like, well, I had family in it. My dad was in it. Somebody was in it. But like, who watches it and goes, I want to do that. It's cool to watch, but I don't know who watches it. It's like, I've got to get in one of those boats.
I don't know anyone that would volunteer. My wife wouldn't even do that. And that says a lot.
Yeah. All right. So, Audi, the Audi Q8, the Audi Q8 e-tron. So we drove the small Audi, all electric, and this is the larger one. At the time, the small one, I was like, it just didn't feel as luxury enough for Audi to me. And I felt like the Genesis, I think it was the GV60, the small one, was just more bang for your buck. Excuse me. So I kind of liked that more. Now I wanted to step up into the bigger Audi, right? This is, you know, the Audi Q8, you guys seen a lot on the road. They make a really incredible, fast, you know, gas engine version, and the RS Q8. This is an EV version. Now, I think having those super high performance versions set your expectations high for the EV version. So there are a few things worth talking about. Now, first of all, overall, this is an all-wheel drive electric vehicle. It's got two motors, one in the front, one in the rear, and the two motors provide the all-wheel drive setup. It's 402 horsepower, it's basically got the Sportback style, where it kind of slopes down like the Q8 Sportback and like the BMW X6. Overall, I think it's nice. I think it was nicer than the small one. I think it's comfortable. It has the 106 kilowatt battery. Now they claim a range of, I think it was 280. Let me see if I got somewhere around 280 or 282, something like that. I don't know if it gets that range. That's the range they're claiming. I'm not sure if you have to go like full, like one pedal regen, which I'm not a big fan of the one pedal driving. I just don't like the way it feels. I don't like some people like it, some people are used to it. I just want it to drive more like a regular vehicle. I want to get to a stoplight and I want it to coast a little, and I want to be able to, like, at the stoplight, take my foot off the gas and have the car inch forward like a car would at idle. And some of these EVs don't do it. And you got to give it a little, you got to hit the accelerator a little bit to move it forward. And then you're on and off the brake as you're closing the gap. I just don't like the driving style of it. And I know some people love it and they get used to it. Now this has a little bit of that. You can turn it on and off. The more that you can turn that on and off, the better. I have one pedal driving on my Ford Lightning, and I turn it off. I just wanted to drive like a normal truck. And honestly, of all of the EVs that I've driven, that's as close to driving like a normal truck. Like it coasts when it needs to coast, and then it, you know, it inches forward at a stoplight, close the gaps, does whatever. And, you know, they told me 300 mile range. I got about 265 mile range. Maybe it's because I have some of those like one pedal driving features turned off, a little less regen. But for me, it's worth the trade-off. I just don't like the one pedal driving. So maybe there's a way to get a little bit more range out of this Q8 closer to what their claimed range is. But overall, anywhere in that range, I mean, everybody says 300, but you know, not many people are getting that. There's some of the sedans and stuff that are getting it. It's a little tougher in the heavy SUVs. And there's an argument to be said about using the one pedal to save your brakes. You're using the electric motor to slow the vehicle down, but I just don't like the way it feels. Now, that being said, the interior is lovely. Great infotainment system, great touchscreen. The seats are pretty comfortable. Their full power has the massaging option to it. It's got a weird gear selector. It's kind of has like this handle and you push it with your, I guess like if you're riding like an ATV or a jet ski and you got like the thumb control, you know, for the throttle, imagine something like that. And that's the gear selector. And you kind of push it forward or push it back to get to drive. And then there's a button on the side you push for park. I guess what I don't love about it was, it's like I stopped like in a parking lot to take photos of the car and I'm moving it forward and I'm backing it up and the sun came in. So the gear selector indicators, the lights, the reverse, the drive, the park, the neutral, they're basically white lights that light up. So you see the D bright white and it's lit up. But what I noticed was it was very sunny out. When sun coming in and hitting that panel with the gear selectors, it made everything bright white. So I couldn't tell what gear I was in. And as I was like kind of moving the car back and forth, I realized I was like, I'm looking over my shoulder to go backwards and I'm going forward. Right. So I know these gear selectors are all, you know, supposed to be like error proof, but we're trying to get away from like accidentally moving forward or not putting it in park or whatever. It's like, and I'm sure like if I open the door, it probably would put it into park, but it doesn't work. Like it doesn't, when there was sun shining on those indicator lights, everything was bright white because it's like white plastic and it's lit up from underneath. And it just made everything super bright. I could not tell what gear I was in. And
that's important.
It was weird. Like, I don't know, maybe you tint the windows or something and it helps a little, but I just noticed it. Like it happened to me and I was like, this can't be the first time this has happened to somebody. So it was just a thought there. It's got all the great technology, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. It's a wireless system. It's got a great B&O sound system to it. Now, the overall performance is kind of what I thought would be a little bit better. You know, 0 to 60 is somewhere in the mid 5 to low 5 ranges, you know, where, you know, my truck is maybe 4 seconds, 0 to 60. Even the Genesis that you don't expect to be a performance vehicle had like a 3.9 or something like 0 to 60 on the smaller one. And like 4 something on the bigger, EV, I think it was the GV70. So I kind of got into this car thinking, hey, it's an Audi and it's a Q8. And, you know, I was expecting just maybe a little bit higher performance model. I wasn't expecting, you know, mid 5, 0 to 60. And it doesn't need to be 4 seconds, but I was expecting something in like the
2023 age.
Yeah. I was just expecting something to be a little zippier, given the range. If they said, hey, this is 315 miles of range, I would go, oh, okay. And it's probably 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds. but they're going, ah, it's probably 280 range and people are testing it and getting a little less. So I'm thinking because it's fast, right? Because it's 0 to 60 in at least 4.5 seconds. And it wasn't really. So it's fine and it's peppy because that torque off the line, but it just doesn't equate into a super dynamic feeling for me. So, you know, at about $90,000, you know, it starts at, I think, 75 ish, 76. The one I drove was the Prestige, which is about 86,000. And then I had a few options that made it about $89,000. So, you know, listen, for an Audi that nice, it's not $125,000. It's under $100,000. So that was kind of nice, but
it's still $100,000 and you're not getting what you expect.
I just feel like with the Genesis coming in at about $67,000 base price, a Rivian RS1 SUV coming in about $75,000 base price, and the Audi coming in about $76,000 base price, that I think those are all worth looking at. You got to take a look at some of these other vehicles and and see if you like it, see if it's worth it. And the size of the battery that it has seems like there's some inefficiencies going on here. This is a 106 kilowatt battery. I've got something similar in my truck. Maybe it's like 112 kilowatt battery. And my truck probably weighs 2,000 pounds more than this Audi does. And it's a lot faster than the Audi. So I'm getting more range and it's a lot faster. So I'm not exactly sure what's going on with the EV technology with Audi, but you know, like all of these EVs, I guess they're getting there, you know, but that being said, it doesn't feel like super EV-ish to me. You get in the car, it's got a normal gauge cluster in front of you. It's got the infotainment system and not everything is a touchscreen push button. It feels more like a conventional car with the latest technology. On the center console, there is a dial where you can control the volume, an actual knob that you can spin for the volume, which is nice. And on the steering wheel, I like the thumb roller volume. You know, like I like that you can click one up or one down. Like I like some of that stuff that I think is better to have than some of this push button stuff. Like I think it was the Mercedes that I was driving and I was trying to hit the volume and it's like a slider with a thumb on the steering wheel. And I'm like, it's just like you slide your thumb up or down and it's like the volume's too loud or the volume's too low. Like, give me a click. Just give me just one little click. So anyway, I do like the Audi. I just wish it was a little bit more efficient or was just faster and just made it more fun. I was like, if you're going to give me 250 miles of range with that size battery or 260 or whatever, then make it fucking haul ass is what I'm saying. That's just kind of my thought on it. But anyway, that's it. I would definitely still cross shop the Genesis for that. I just think it's a nice vehicle and the bang for the buck and it looks good and everyone mistakes it for a Bentley and that's kind of what you want. anyway, speaking of EV, so someone was digging around in the patent and trademark office again, I believe Car Buzz, and they found another trademark filed by Ford for F-150 Flash, and it's sort of suggesting a high performance version, sport truck version of the Lightning, which is kind of interesting because Ford has been doing these like high horsepower racing versions like the Mach-E 1400. And then they just ran Pikes Peak and the Supervan. Now there's a history of the Supervan. They've done versions over this over the years, obviously gas engine versions, but the Supervan 4.2, which is the model they're calling it, that was like the second fastest time overall at Pikes Peak this year. I want to say this like Wolf TSC won it, did it in 8 minutes and 40 seconds, and then the Supervan was in the open class and did it in 847. So the other car was the unlimited class, and then there's the open class in 847. That and seeing in the van is crazy.
Ridiculous sentence.
Yeah. And right. And so it was second overall, first in its class. And to show you how fast this is for those two guys, the third place finisher was 30 seconds behind the Ford Superman. So anyway, just kind of interesting. So there is some thought on Ford's part into high performance EV, right?
The van.
And with the van, but then they did the Mach-E 1400 that that I think Von Gittin drove, right? He was hooning that thing around. This other thing that came up was it's been some years, right, that Michelin showed us this airless tire, and just had like ribbed kind of tire, and they're like, oh, it can, I obviously not performance oriented, it's not meant to be a racing tire on anything that, you know, like what we talk about here, but they have an airless tire, and it looks kind of the same. It's like it's got a ring on the middle that attaches to the wheel, and then it's got all these ribs that you can basically see through, and it's got a tread on the outside. So it kind of looks like a fan blade, in a sense. And they're testing it with, oddly enough, the French Postal Service. They've got it on a few small delivery vans, and they're going to roll out up to 40 vans by the end of the year, sometime in 2024. This is interesting technology to me. Certainly not really for passenger cars yet, but the idea of this on fleet, on delivery vans, like your, all of your Amazon vans, UPS and postal service and FedEx and stuff like that, is interesting because you're not going to get a blowout. It's puncture resistant, basically, and you don't worry about and all of those delivery vans, because they're heavy and they carry a lot of weight and oftentimes can be top heavy, a blowout can be wildly unsafe. So I don't know, it's just kind of interesting technology. Will it make its way to like heavy SUVs like Escalades or something at some point? I'm not sure if it's going to
put it on
far.
As an American driver, please, dear God, put it on an 18-wheeler.
Something like that. Put it on the big rigs if they can get it to handle the weight and be safer. But some of those big rigs, we've seen the blowout and then just the scraps of rubber come flying and screw up the cars behind it. Like,
yeah, one
smashing the grills and windshields.
One screwed up the red eye.
Oh, yeah.
At one point. But yeah, I mean, that, you know, you'll pull up on these big rigs, and if you mistakenly look over at the tire tread, your life flashes before you, because then you multiply that times whatever it is, 18, and think, Jesus Christ, when was the last time this guy got tires? Oh, and there's rain. Oh, and he's going 80. Yeah. So
yeah.
I mean, this is terrifying.
That's a good point. And I don't know what the service intervals are, but how often do you see like pretty bald tires on the big rigs?
Daily.
Yeah.
Literally.
And so I wonder if this airless technology, excuse me, would allow for more durable treads. Cause I don't know if that process is going to change, but you would think in that process of making this airless tire, they start thinking about how long those tires last, you know. And listen, we all know not just the tread life, but the age of the tire. You know, we don't have to mention Paul Walker again. And tire pressure, right? Tire pressure is why, like back in the day when Ford Explorers were flipping over, this is why all new cars have TPMS, right? Anyway, it's just kind of an interesting technology. We'll kind of see where it goes. I feel like this is one of those weird technologies that you could probably really test just in Forza Motorsport. They could just do all of the calculations on these cars, on all the rubber and everything like they've done in the past, and just full start testing everything.
As we have, there's someone who's doing it, yeah.
You know, and also my question would be sound. Can you make it quieter?
That was my next question. I mean, how in God's name can you make it quieter? I mean,
yeah. Anyway, that's what's going on. And the last thing I wanted to touch on was Ferrari's XX program. The XX program has always been track specific vehicles, not even street legal vehicles, but they announced the SF90 XX Stradale and a spider version. I don't know. I've been kind of put off by some of Ferrari's design recently, but this thing's kind of badass. This thing looks mean, and this thing is street legal. And actually, the coupe and the spider.
It is street legal. The FX yeah. is street legal.
So this is the first like street legal XX car to come from that program.
Got out of it because he couldn't. He wanted the FXX that came right after the Enzo, and they wouldn't. Right. And he couldn't drive it on the street, so he backed out of the
program. Your brother, right? Yeah. So I don't know, some program. I don't know all the details, but it was like, I don't even know if you get to bring the car home or Ferrari holds it for you, and then you call them up and go, "I'm doing a track day," and they bring them out. I guess you get to bring it home, but it was like track days. You bring it out to and with the other XX cars, you're right. So like a little off, but you know, Porsche did it with the most recent, like that 935 car. It was like, this is a track only car. It ended up being collectible, and you train them at auction, but you can't drive it on the street. This one is street legal, and it is a badass car. Now it's $840,000, and they're all basically spoken for. So you have to be someone like your brother who's on the list and maybe got the offer to get one. But I
wonder though, if you opt out, if you're still on the list, or they just say, okay.
Yeah. So there's been a lot of talk about that kind of stuff. If you don't get something, are you still on the list and whatever? And Ferrari has this weird thing, like, I don't know if punishing you is the right term, but and I'll bring up Sammy Hagar only because we've talked about it a bunch of times on the other podcast on Shift and Steer with Aaron Hagar. And there was something where he was like, oh, okay, I want a LaFerrari. And then he's like, I don't know if I do. So he like passed the first time. And then later kind of got convinced into it. So he, you know, went to order it, but they said, well, you passed on it. So now we're going to get you back on the list. They're like, now you have to buy like a Ferrari FF as well, or a Lusso. They're like, you got to buy the Lusso. You can trade the Lusso. You can do whatever. There's no rule on whatever, but you have to buy the Lusso. You got to spend another $280,000 to get yourself back on the list. Now, it could be one of those things where you're like, all right, fine. I'm buying at the time, I think it was the FF, not the Lusso, and just commissioned it at the dealer and go, I bought it. Now it's new. I've never titled it. Can you sell it? It's a weird thing to, like, I don't know, drive sales or just kind of make a point to some of the customers. It's one of those reasons that Leno has always said he's never owned Ferraris, because he just doesn't like the ownership process.
Understood. And if you're paying that kind of money, then you might want to like it.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Anyway, the SUV that came down, the
rumble about the Ferrari Pro.
Yeah. I don't know too much about it, but I'm sure your brother knows more. I'm sure a great source would be Ken Lingenfelder. We should chat with him at some point. He's on the list, and he's a big collector, and he's got, you know, he's got LaFerrari and I guess the Enzo, and he's got his collection of stuff. But yeah, it's just kind of it's a different process than like 4GT and some of the companies going, all right, you apply for the car, we get to pick who kind of gets it based off of your history and whatever. And then you don't sell it for 2 years. That's not like, hey, you got to buy, you know, an F-150 Lightning to get on the list for, you know, for the GT. It's like, it's not really, it's not that. It's just
that'd
like,
that'd be easy, though.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you're on the list for the GT. Boy, okay.
So, the SF90XX, there's going to be 799 coupes, 599 convertibles. They are a plug-in hybrid V8. There's three electric motors that that assist the gas engine. It's a combined power of 1,016 horsepower. Now, the V8 alone makes 769 horsepower. That's a crazy V8, which is amazing. So 1,016 horsepower. Ferrari claims 2.3 seconds 0 to 60 and 199 mile an hour top speed, and
84 miles and 15 miles on the battery.
So yeah, 15.5 miles of electric range. And the electric top speed is 84 miles per hour. So yeah, you knew it. You knew it. You got the specs on this. But I think it looks kind of cool. I think it looks very kind of supercar-ish, and I think it's very cool looking without being wildly over the top.
I think it is, but I think it needs to be a little more wildly over the top. For it's a mundane supercar. I mean, comparatively, for almost $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's beautiful, but I would expect for it to be a little more over the top.
Well, you know, being a street legal version kind of gave them permission to tone down a little bit.
But why?
Yeah, I guess so.
that's a rolling sales tool. Kidding me?
It's definitely going to be showing up to Cars and Coffee events, and everyone's going to gawk over it, and it's going to be cool to see. But anyway, that's the latest on Ferrari. So Goldberg's Garage, you're wrapping it up over there. I went back and I watched the Leverack video. They shot the video when they were over there. I know in your mind it was months and months ago, but it was great. Obviously, a big fan of the Leverack storage systems. Now that you've spent some time with it, I'm sure you're understanding why we love it.
Oh, fantastic. I just wish that I could, you know, they want to shove two more of them in here. It just takes away my floor space. And I wish that I had the ability to put them up, because they're fantastic. I mean, as far as using your space wisely, I mean, it couldn't be any better product. I love what they do.
They're pretty good. They're pretty durable. Out back in your wash bay, bay area. I mean, the idea of even putting one back there, loading it up with your washing materials and stuff that's not like super valuable, it can want to be stored kind of out of sight outside. Put one along the wall in the wash bay. Then you can always, and they also have the magnets that we have, so we can hang. Like I hang.
Those magnets,
yeah.
Is that their product?
A Gator magnet. I think they partnered with Gator magnets. And
I gotta tell you, man. I haven't posted anything about it yet, but Gator magnets sent me about 10 of those, and yep. They're fantastic.
They're great, right? Yeah,
freaking great. They couldn't be designed any better. I just need more of them.
So I
completely transformed that workbench area in like 2 minutes.
I hang the hose on there when I just go out and just run it over my shoulder and just make the, you know, make the circle, and I hang it on the Gator magnet, extension cords, things like that that are easy to do. Even if you just walked around your garage with some of the big steel beams, you need an extension cord there just hanging. The Gator magnet's fantastic, but
they're invaluable.
But the Leverack maybe in the wash bay was a thought that I had when I watched the video.
I am ecstatic that you brought that up, because unbelievably, I had not thought about that.
And it keeps the wet gear outside, you know, the sponges and all that stuff. So in your detailing equipment. So that's a thought. So Levrak has a YouTube video up on their channel where you're on there and you get to see a little bit of the garage coming together. You had a lot of the cars in there. You had the Benpack lifts. So that's a little sneak peek into Goldberg's garage. But now that we're getting that we're getting settled in, you're going to start doing more in there.
I'm going to get, yes, we are settled in tomorrow. A couple of the trades are going to come up and hopefully, knock on wood, finish up the job. But last week I had two extremely famous YouTubers come by who are ironically my neighbors. I think on Instagram it's Donut Operator and then AK Guy. But these dudes, that's all they do, right? All they do are the YouTube videos and the Instagram, and they're influencers. And though I have done a million things in my life, I don't profess to know everything about all of them. And getting into the YouTube space and the social media space, as you can tell, I'm not going to start it until it's time, right? So, I mean, 3.5 years after we broke ground here, it's finally time to start this. So Goldberg's Garage, they came by last week. We shot a number of videos. We did an entrance or like an intro video for the garage. And then, you know, we're going to hit car after car after car. And we're going to tell the story, you know, entire backstory of each and every car. We're going to get in the cars. We're going to drive them. And it's going to be a lot of fun, man. These guys are hilarious. They don't take themselves very seriously. I've got a lot here that a lot of people have not seen.
Yeah.
And now we're going to make it happen, man. I never thought this day would come, but it's cool. We're going to have membership, like 5 different membership levels on Goldberg's Garage. And, whether it's 8x10s or whether it's Goldberg's Garage t-shirts or whether it's, you know, signed auction item stuff that I'll be giving out, or there's so many different ways to connect with me through Goldberg's Garage. And I'm kind of looking at it like a television show. I have heard from my fans for 20, 30 years, man. And now I can finally satiate them. It's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, we're going to do Goldberg's Garage gym workouts and stuff like that at the same time. We're going to bring in the firearms. So Goldberg's Garage isn't going to be pigeonholed to just automotive. It's going to be a little bit of everything, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very excited. There's a lot of cool things. And like I said, all the stuff I've got here is here for a reason. And now it's time to share it with everyone. So I'm pretty excited for that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I get to talk about cars and have some fun, work out, and do stuff like that. So,
yeah. No, that's good. That's fantastic. We'll be able to cover it here and let you guys know when it's all getting launched and what's going to be the first videos and what to kind of expect. And as you get used to doing it, you'll find, like the podcast, it just gets a little bit, there's more of a template that kind of goes into play. So
that's why I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. You get two guys who are heavily involved in the space and are extremely successful at what they do, man. I'm not omnipresent in knowing everything in the world. So I have no issue reaching out and asking advice from other people. So I'm trying to, like I said, satiate the fans and give them what they want. And in 2023, I don't necessarily know all the ways to do that. So I'm reaching outside of my immediate area, and I'm asking for help, and these guys are able to deliver for me. So I'm excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Awesome, man. We'll look forward to that, and we'll just keep updates going on how that all that stuff launches. But I think we're good. We're wrapped up for today. I appreciate you guys listening as always, and we'll catch you guys next week. Until next time, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.